pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
And good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today with myself, Kevin Larame, and Dwayne Mullins on the line as well. To start the show today, Dwayne, a few blockbuster news this weekend. We'll get to the Alphonso Davies situation in just a few minutes, but first, a big trade between two Western Conference teams. Dominic Badji of Colorado goes to FC Dallas, and Kellen Acosta goes to Colorado.
That's a bit of a strange one. I gotta say, I was a little taken off guard with that one. I can see why Colorado might have wanted to upgrade Badji, but I'm not sure Acosta going the other way is really where I came down on this. But, there's always alternative meanings and alternative reasons for trades in MLS. They're never quite a straight line. There's always a lot more going on than maybe initially meets the eye, and perhaps that's what we're seeing here.
The playing time of Kellen Acosta this season has not been what the player would have wanted, and it's a situation where he got injured, and by the time he comes back, someone else is at his position, and trying to get back to that form and fitness that he had before the injury was a bit difficult, and trying to break into the starting 11 was not as difficult. If there's one thing that's probably going to happen, he's going to have some playing time in Colorado.
Well, 100%. It's a good move for Colorado. Let's not ignore that right now. I mean, I think that the first thing that we need to sort of look at when coming to that is to look at the prices and how expensive it will be for Dallas and how much they might be saving here, right? If you've got a player that you feel can replace someone, even at an 80% level, like a good player, and you're paying him at, 30% or 50% less, right, you get into hashtag math here, then it really makes sense to make these moves. And that's kind of the weird thing for MLS, and the thing that frustrates a lot of people with MLS, the thing that excites a lot of people with MLS too, is you have this kind of strategical decisions that happen. It's a great move for Colorado, though, and really this is a team that's not necessarily going to, as we know, they have Tim Howard, but they're not necessarily a team that's going to go out and get a huge, huge name to profile and build around, whereas Acosta is a name known within the league that's affordable, that they can have now, and they can sort of, at least the hardcore fan in Colorado can sort of get a little service in this particular move.
And before his injury, he was a U.S. men's national team new good top player for the next few years. Unfortunately, with the injuries and the fact that the United States did not make the World Cup, it never really panned out the way Dallas saw fit, and last year has been difficult for Kellen Acosta. But before that, he was one of those upcoming players in MLS that we actually thought has a bright future in front of him, and would not necessarily stay here for long. And speaking of not staying here for long, we're going to get there in a second, Vancouver fans. But for Colorado, Dominic Badji never really panned out the way they anticipated. And you mentioned Colorado and DPs. Let's face it, Colorado always has been a bit cheap when it comes to Major League standards and their designated players. I'm saying player, and there's no S there. There's a reason. So there's that. Remember just a few years ago, their first ever DP was just after the World Cup in 2014, a certain Gabriel Torres that never really panned out as well.
Yeah, well, that's when you try and get cute with the DPs. That's what will happen, right? And Vancouver has been through that as well. Not only there's other teams, too, that try and get, as I say, cute. They look at players that are just above that range, and sort of MLS addressed those kind of players with the TAM rule coming in, and now you see them coming in as TAM players, which is a far lesser risk. So it makes sense that way. But no, I do like this move for Colorado, and you got a feel for that fan base, so such as it is. I don't mean to dismiss those that are fans of it, as we know there aren't enough of them. But it's I don't know if this is going to attract any more, but I do think that it's important to service the fans that are there. And I do think from an on-the-field, on-pitch sort of perspective, this can improve the Rapids and make them a more competitive team, which ultimately should attract more of the casual fans that in turn, blah, 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 connect those. Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever get to the blah, blah, blah to the end where you have like a big-name DP come in, but the mountains are pretty, so maybe one day they might attract one.
Yeah, it's a nice spot of the world, so I have to visit Colorado in the near future. Let's move a bit north and a bit to the west. Let's go to Vancouver, where the mountains are pretty, too. Alphonso Davies did not play in the weekend. Alfonso Davies did not play last Wednesday. Big rumors and whirling, and Cal Robinson did not even put the kibosh to it. Maybe Munich, maybe Vancouver are a bit too greedy, but one thing's for sure. Alfonso Davies is probably on his way out. Maybe not right now. Maybe it's going to take some months, and maybe he'll be sent back on loan with the Vancouver Whitecaps to lead out the season and move out in January. We don't know all the details yet. Nothing is really officialized, and nothing has happened. Maybe we'll know in the next few hours, because usually it happens right after our show, so we'll see. But Alfonso Davies, probably on his way out to a big European club, as maybe the biggest signing in MLS history.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in terms of a young player, it's a very significant one. I think that a couple thoughts on this one. The first thought I always have when I see this is the initial reaction is obvious. You have fans of the player and of the team that just don't want him to go. But putting them aside and on a shelf for a minute, that those fans are either new to the game and don't understand how it works. And I don't say that condescendingly. I say that legitimately. They're just not getting the sort of how the world works and how there's sharks in the football world that just eat up young talent. And that's just the reality of it. And that, you know, you can be, you know, unlike in the ocean, if you're eaten by a shark, you can, you know, the shark ED can take advantage of that, both the player and the club that was eaten. That's an analogy I'm going to stop now because it's getting weirder. But nonetheless, there is some benefit from that. But the, you know, those that just want to hold it back and think that this player should stay behind, you know, I'm not going to give them much time because I think it's obvious that he does need to move on. The other reaction you always get is this, like, oh, you can't go to the big club. And I find that defeatist. And it happens. It's not just a Canadian thing. It particularly is. But you also see it amongst American fans. Oh, there's no way he could possibly break into Bayern Munich. Well, Bayern Munich's not going after a 17-year-old kid for the story. They're not saying, oh, isn't this a beautiful story of a, you know, a
former immigrant refugee
that moves. Former refugee. No, that's nothing to do with that. They think he'd play. And if they loan him to a B2 team for a year and keep an eye on him and keep him on the books, then so be it. The B2 still step up from MLS. I know that's blasphemous for a lot of people to hear, but it really is.
And it's
so
not just
I don't have an issue with that.
Oh, I don't have an issue with it as well. And it's not necessarily just to do with B1 or B2 if it's Bayern Munich. It could be Besiktas too. Because right now there was a rumor that it was done, and then it was a little news coming out of Germany saying, well, maybe not as now. It's been delayed a bit because Vancouver wants a bit more money. It's maybe thought that it's going to be between 10 and 15 million, which is a lot of money for a 17-year-old. And disregard where it comes from, you rarely see those figures. Those are like Barco figures for Atlanta, right? This is almost that. And you don't see that every day, never mind Canadian players. You just don't see big clubs spending that much money for a 17-year-old as often as a bit older players, usually when they're a bit more developed. And this does say to me that they do find a lot of qualities in what Davies brings to the table. And it's going to happen. And Kyle Robinson mentioned a few things the way he mentioned it after the weekend, saying, look, you guys complain a lot about how I use Davies and why, and maybe I don't play enough. Why am I patient? Why am I moving things on? Why am I? You'll all understand, and maybe you won't feel I did such a bad job in the next few days, which means we'll have a resolution to that story in a couple days.
No, you absolutely will. He's going somewhere. I mean, there's just no doubt that he's not going to stay in Vancouver for the rest of the year. And we knew that going on. We knew that this was something that was going to happen. Will he be loaned back? I think that could be a little bit of wishful thinking. It's not the worst case scenario if he's loaned back for the remainder of the season. I don't necessarily mind that. I think that works out both as a goodbye for the Vancouver fans and also he'll continue to play, obviously, regularly. But I think that if Munich wants him or whoever, that he's going to go over sooner rather than later. And look, it's a great thing for Canadian soccer. This is a record transfer for Canadian, as you say. It's a very high transfer for any teenager, although if he was from a more traditional football nation, he would demand more money. And I think that maybe is what MLS and Vancouver are trying to take advantage of. But I think that at the same time, you don't want to push this to the point that MLS is notorious about holding to its, sticking to its guns, right? When these things happen, they did it with Lauren, and to finally until the it's the player forced the move. So, you know, this isn't out of character for them.
Ballou last year, Davies this year. Is Canada becoming a fertile ground for teenage soccer players? I'm saying this a bit tongue-in-cheek, but just bear with me.
Well, go ahead, Finch. I have a thought. So you
no, 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 that's what I mean.
Do you have any more thought on that?
No, go ahead. Are we doing things better, or are we developing players despite the way we train, despite our pyramid?
Yes. No. I mean, this is literally my theory on this, is that if you look at the way the Canadian MLS teams use the academies, they are far less married to the NCAA system. American teams and American players and American families still very much look at the NCAA and look at it as an opportunity for them to get an education and go on to school, whereas Canadian players, it's not that their families, it's not that they don't value education any less. It's that they don't see, what do they call it now, U-Sport? They don't see U-Sport as that valuable to them. And increasingly, the NCAA isn't viewed as the be-all, end-all. They're in it now to get to an MLS academy. That's their goal when they're 15, 14 years old, not to get a scholarship. It used to be the opposite. And I think that attitude change is more what we're seeing here. Now, these guys are the tip of the iceberg, right? And far more of these players that are in Canadian academies are going to end up either in the NCAA or Canadian university soccer. And that's fine, because I don't want university soccer to go away in terms of an option for players that are elite but not quite professional elite. And, you know, the odd, you know, rough diamond, late bloomer, whatever, will come through that system. But by and large, it's there just to provide a high level of play for players that love the game. And a lot of those players will benefit the game down the line, not necessarily as players, but as people that love the game, as administrators, coaches, managers, fans, whatever, right? That's the value of the college system. I just think that in Canada, we don't view the college system the same way. So our players are just more open-minded to the idea of turning pro at 16, turning pro at 17 than American players. It's not everywhere. I mean, there are obviously a lot of American players that are doing that now, but I think Canada's a little ahead of that curve, and it has a lot to do with the way that we view college sport.
He's already capped for Canada. Was a golden boot of the Gold Cup last year. 2 years ago? Well, last year. It was 2017. So there's that positive that no matter what he does, he's Canadian. He's not going to be staying in Germany for 5 years and playing for Germany. He will stay for Canada. And he's a bit of our beacon, right? He's the beacon of the young generation, shining the light on our national team, giving us hope for 2022.
Well, for sure, and 2026, obviously, beyond that. And that 26 is the ultimate beacon that I think might be able to attract certain players that are in Barcelona right now to maybe
Ballou, consider Canada. Oh, the amount of tweets that I've seen this weekend directed to Ballou, it's like, Ballou, come on, choose us, please.
Well, I mean, if he is being pragmatic about it's just, now that the automatic bid is there, it may seem silly to those that look at Ivory Coast and look at Canada and say, well, obviously, Cote d'Ivoire is better, but they have equal chance of winning a World Cup in the next two World Cups because of the automatic bid. So assuming Canada gets it, but I have not heard a single expert suggest that they won't yet. So I wouldn't worry too much about that side of things. Yeah, no, there is a lot of young talent here now. It's whether they can get enough depth and enough experience together, playing together, to get over those sort of psychological and sort of experiential humps that blocked them in the past. The talent is there to get to the hex at the very least in the 2022 qualifying. If there is a hex, we don't know yet. And whether or not they can do it, well, that's something, that's a headache for the next year and a half to think about. But at least we get the League of Nations, and they announced, of course, last week, we didn't really pay much attention to it, but the Dominica game is at BMO Field in the fall. So get your tickets now for that thrilling matchup between Dominica and Canada. I'm sure it'll sell out fast. Hashtag sarcasm, but nonetheless, it's good that those games are happening, and hopefully Canada can get into the top group. So we're playing Mexico and, you know, Honduras in particular, before we play them in games that really, really matter.
It would be fun to beat Honduras just for FH sakes, just for our confidence level, just to say, look, this is a new era. This is a new day. A new day has come, and we can beat Honduras now.
We have beaten them, but I know.
We draw them when we could get a result last qualification process, and the one before we got destroyed 8-1 in Honduras. I don't have to remind anyone that is listening, especially from Canada, what happened last time we went to San Pedro Sula needing 1 point to go to the hexagonal round. All right, Dwayne, let's take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Canadian review, a little bit of everything in Canadian soccer and MLS this weekend.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/ Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. This show is brought to you by sportsinspired.ca. Get your merchandise of SPN, just like this beautiful mug and beautiful polos and other sports-inspired merchandise at sportsinspired.ca. And give us a like and a pledge on Patreon, patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. We'll give you access, $2 a month, to the exclusive Two Solitude Soccer podcast, where Dwayne and I had a great conversation last week about the future of broadcasting and streaming in Canada for the Canadian Premier League and others as well. So a big conversation there. So if you are inclined to listen to this great conversation, $2 a month will give you access to it. Let's start with a defeat. Let's start with, we were talking about Davies, so let's continue there. Davies did not play. That's been two games in a row did not play. Seattle 2, Vancouver Whitecaps 0. And a red card for Efrain Juarez for his physical contact with the referee, Chris Penso. Red card. Vancouver did not look good in that one.
It was not a good weekend for the Whitecaps. Of course, the Sounders celebrating their quote-unquote House 74, their heritage weekend with their Slovak unis. I really like the 89 Sounders. Wikipedia that if you don't get the reference. That's me being critical of them claiming that history. But at any rate, nonetheless of that, no, it was not a good weekend for the Whitecaps. Obviously, the Davies, well, look, if you're an informed fan, the Davies stuff is a good news story. But I do understand and empathize with the more casual, the fact that this one guy that's sort of this shining light this season might be pulled away. And if you are interested in giving us $2 a month, we will go far more in depth on Davies on Two Solitudes this week for sure. But in terms of what this means for the Whitecaps overall, we keep talking about them being, you know, all the way up, all the way down this season. They're beginning to look a more down than up. And I said the same thing last year this time, and this is why it's frustrating to cover the Whitecaps, even, you know, as much as we do, is that they spin their wheels. They never really stand out in any real way. They never are terrible, but at the same time, they're never great. And I've said this like 20,000 times, and I'm sick of saying it, but at the same time, what are they going to do with the money they get from Davies? This is the question that I have, and this is, I think, the biggest question anyone that's a Whitecaps fan should have for the rest of this season. Because if they can spend that money well in the next couple of weeks, then maybe they can make a jump up. We saw Seattle do it a few seasons ago, 2016, with the mid-season guy come in and sort of jolt them into the future. And this was a player
who scored twice.
That wasn't going to come.
Who scored twice against Vancouver? Ladero.
And he wasn't a super, superstar. Like, you're not talking about getting a guy in from one of the biggest clubs in the world. You're not talking about Wayne Rooney here, right? So they can do it, but I don't know. The other part of what the Whitecaps' philosophy is that it's not so much how they go about it. It's that they haven't really found the right players in a long time. Who's the last real key guy that they found on their own that came in and really made a big, big difference in this league? Even this Davies stuff kind of fell in their lap.
Yeah.
Right? So,
like, oh, wow, there's that kid. There's that kid in Edmonton. Someone sent us an email. We should take a look at him. Yeah, come here, Alfonso.
If the family had immigrated to Sarnia instead of Edmonton, he's a TFC player. Like, I mean, that's how they got him. So it's really, you know, not something that it's good for them that they're going to sell them on. I mean, it's beneficial to them, but, you know, they didn't really develop them from scratch. They had him handed to them. But at any rate, that's not a criticism so much as an observation.
Well, at least they didn't F it up, right? They kept him and they continued his progression forward up until this point. And that's something in itself. Last player that really had an impact, like a Davies for me from Vancouver. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's a long time ago. Camilo, maybe, was the one where they found themselves and they got him into the mix. And it was actually a great player loved by the fan base. Maybe that's a bit a long time ago, but that's the name that jumped out to my mind when you were saying this.
Yeah, and you're right. But that's 2012. Like that, it's a long time ago now. Like,
you left in 2014.
Podcast during his peak? No.
Well, you left in 2014. I remember. We remember talking about it when he left and going to Querétaro and then not being paid, and then things got better for him.
Yeah, well, that was the peak of his career, I think, at that point in time. What he did for the Whitecaps, and that's certainly the star that we do talk about. Yeah, but I would look at their scouting and their player identification. And how they're sort of focused on certain players and certain agents. And we've seen this problem in other cities before, including the one I'm in, where you get hyper-focused on utilizing the same agent.
Montreal.
Yeah. Precisely. It's not unique to any one MLS team, but it can be a problem. And I do think I'm not the only person. I'm certainly not the only person, even though I'm in Ontario. There are people in British Columbia saying the same thing as I am right now. Is it? And no one's suggesting anything unbetold here, but other than just maybe you're too focused on the same two agents or whatever, and you're too utilizing too easy contacts, and you need to spread your wings a little bit. That's what I'm suggesting, because the player identification has not been spectacular for the Whitecaps over the past few years.
And the Whitecaps keep dropping in the table, and there's a lot of chatter in Vancouver's fans to maybe it's time to make a change. Do we do it now? Do we do the offseason? Is the front office settled? Is everything going according to plan? And obviously, the answer is, well, no, it's not according to plan. They're not in the playoff spot as we speak. And with, technically, their roster on paper, Kai Kamara, Felipe, and a few other players that could maybe propel this team up, but it's becoming difficult. And if Colorado does better with Kellen Acosta, well, guess what? It's another team that's going to be battling with yourself for a playoff spot. So, no, it's not going to be an easy end of the season, and an easy just a few weeks right now. What does Vancouver do on Wednesday when Montreal visits for the Canadian Championship, the second leg? We'll see on Wednesday night. But, yeah, it is that type of place where, as much as about a month and a half ago, not even 2 months ago, they were almost top of the Western Conference. Now they're trending downwards.
Yep, they are. And I think that they have a bit of MLSE pre-Bell Rogers in them, and that they're happy to stay competitive and make playoffs and get a couple extra dates each year and not necessarily thrive for anything more than that. So that's my concern, has been for a while with the Whitecaps. But not a terrible start to that game, really, this weekend was what killed them. And once that 2-0 loss was it like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, yeah. And they're down 2-0, and it was very early anyway.
Donnell, come on. Donnell Henry, cannot touch the ball with your hand in the box.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a core rule.
Yeah. Like, you can't anywhere, especially in the box, and especially with VAR. Absolutely. Let's move to Chicago. TFC. Having Josie back. And Dwayne, I guess you're onto something. Josie made a difference. Chicago 1, TFC 2.
And Mavinga 2. Let's not forget Mavinga. Mavinga allows Moro to go wide, and suddenly they start to look pretty close to what they looked like last year in the MLS Cup playoffs. Josie, as I said this on Twitter. It's not the first time I said it. I certainly said it in the show before. And I've been saying it in the show for 2 years now. Forget Saba, forget Mavinga, forget Moore, forget
Bradley.
Bono, all these guys. And Bradley, the MVP of TFC is Josie Altidore. He almost single-handedly drove him to the MLS Cup last year. TFC was not playing well in the fall. I mean, this slump sort of started, that they've had like sort of this malaise, not counting a couple good performances in the CCL against the Mexican team. It sort of happened around October last year after the great spell through those summer months. And although I think it has to do with being tired and a lot of different things, but Josie has always been that one rock when he is in that lineup that has allowed them to fight through it, to win 1-0 games when they needed to. And that's been the biggest difference between this year and last year, between the slump this year, between the bad streak where they're under a point per game, which is unbelievable when you consider what they did last year, is that they were losing those games. When they didn't have that Josie, that person, that rock that was creating so much opportunity for everyone else, not just himself, and also doing wonderful things on his own, they're losing 1-0 instead of winning 1-0. They're drawing 2-2 instead of winning 4-2, that type of thing, right? And I think we saw it on the weekend. And look, they're 11 points back still, because the results the other way didn't go their way, I should say. And I think that's going to be the frustration for TFC fans the rest of the way because they've dug such a big hole. But, you know, they have 14 games left. If they win 10 of them, you do the math on that, that's a lot of points. That's a big streak. They'd be really hot. But if they did, they'd probably make the playoffs. And if they win 10 of their next 14, they're probably going to be amongst favorites heading into the playoffs because of that strength. And if Josie stays healthy, God help me, they have a chance to do something like that.
Yeah, they do. I just want to touch on Chicago for a second. Raheem Edwards, who was traded from Montreal to Chicago for $400,000 of allocation money, made his debut starting 11, and he played the best he has all year. Funny how you put him in his original position, more on the left than on the right, and, well, he plays well and was able to do great things even when he was drifting to the right, almost finding Nikolic for the opening goal early in this game in the box. Raheem Edwards, a second start, well, third start of his career, basically. But maybe Chicago is the right place for Edwards. Maybe he can thrive there. Maybe he will have more playing time and can actually express himself on the pitch.
I think that, and to use an analogy here, that Raheem Edwards for TFC, their relationship moving forward is going to be very much like that girlfriend or boyfriend that you may have had for like a week, like 5 years ago, that it was kind of fun for a week, but it was never really going to fit with you, and you broke up with them, and they never got over you, and you're kind of wishing them well, and they want you to die. I think that's going to be the relationship for a while, but nonetheless, I wish Raheem well, and certainly when he plays his natural position, as we saw in the first half of last year at TFC, he can be an effective offensive weapon, and I think Chicago might be a good fit for him. As I said, I think mentally he's able to now move on, and I think even the fact that he got to play TFC right away might be that final. Montreal is going to be interesting when he plays the Impact again too, because he might even be angrier at that now. But
he might be. But I think I'm not going to put words in his mouth, so I'm not going to say I think he views this. But like, Montreal was Toronto's fault in his mind, right? Because Toronto didn't protect him. He got picked up by LAFC, and LAFC are the one who traded him to Montreal, right? So it's a complicated situation, but for sure, we've seen him perform a lot better on the weekend than he has been all season long, at least for the short times that he played for Montreal. Let's move to Montreal now. Before we talk about the game, a new player is coming to Montreal, Jimmy Briand, a striker for Guingamp in Ligue 1 in France, and as well a former Lyon player that played under a certain Remy Gard when he was at Lyon. Are we seeing, finally, the networks of Remy Gard? Well, we've seen them before with Fanny and Camacho, but we're seeing Remy Gard looking at this league, knowing he needs a striker that it works the way he wants, and works is the big word in here. Briand has 30-something goals in 106 appearances for Guingamp since 2015. He's not like a pure striker that scores every two games, scored about every three games or so. But he works a lot. He works his butt off and is able to work behind the ball, behind his back behind the net, able to implicate the players next to him, which would be Piatti, which would be Silva, two players that have changed Montreal's season over the last 5 weeks. I think this is a good signing, and for a coach like Remy Gard, getting someone you do know might actually help the transition of a player into MLS too.
No, precisely, and look, we've talked at length about the Ligue 1 possibilities that are underutilized, and how it was kind of ironic that TFC was better using Ligue 1 than Montreal, the team that really should be getting there. But it now seems like, you know, both through the management that they now have, and, you know, the connections that he would have because of his affiliations there, we are seeing some more mining of it. And I think it's a great league to mine from, because they have some younger players that are highly skilled. I mean, they're the world champions now. You think their domestic league's pretty good? Yeah, probably.
Decent.
I think that I think Montreal should absolutely be continuing this affiliation. But in terms of like a striker with a good work rate, I think that is maybe the most underappreciated position or underappreciated role that you can have on a football field right now, because everyone wants their strikers to score. Of course we do, but there's so much more that they do out there, especially in the modern game where a lot of the attack comes from the midfield and the width. Right nowadays, that traditional number nine out there isn't necessarily a position that a lot of players, teams even utilize in a true way anymore. So having someone that just does the dirty, gritty stuff up front to create that space out wide and out in the middle for the creative players to really do their thing and bangs in the odd sort of poacher goal. That's a brilliant player, and they don't get enough respect.
Yeah, they don't. And Montreal needs to find an international spot over the next few days to officialize this transfer. It's a free transfer, free agreement between Gega and Montreal. And it's a club that...
We'll flip a third rounder for it.
Yeah, exactly.
They always do.
They always find a way.
A 2017, Chris, I'm getting behind my tablet. 2021.
2021.
Second round, super draft pick.
Yeah, just give me a spot. Exactly. That's probably going to be possible. But what does it say for the strikers already in Montreal? What does it say for Jackson ML? What does it say for Mancosu? You mentioned a striker that does the work rate. It's the only reason why Mancosu still plays with Montreal, even though he scored 2 goals this season. One this weekend, Saturday night, very late Saturday night, and one in the first game of the season against Vancouver. Those were his only 2 goals this season, but in between, lately especially, he did provide the work rate and find ways to create space for Tider behind him, for Piatti on his left, for Silva on his right. But confidence is missing, and he could have scored maybe 3 goals against Portland, which we're going to touch in a second. So it's probably a good way to see this. Right now, Jackson Amel is have some problem with a muscle in his left calf with the knock that he received during the Canadian Championship game last weekend. We'll see if he does play this this Wednesday. Montreal travel with a full contingent of 24 players for this trip because they're staying in Portland, going to travel to Vancouver. They're not making the cross-country trip back and forth for the game on Wednesday. So there's a chance we see Mathieu Chouinard play a third game in a row. He actually had some minutes on Saturday in MLS as well. But let's go back to the game. Portland 2, Montreal 2. Montreal taking the lead twice in this game. Wow, yeah. And it was a very entertaining game. Rémi Garde got sent off, and according to Rémi Garde, it's because, well, my English is not that good, so the words I know are not necessarily the best ones, so maybe that's one of the reasons I got sent off. But it was a good game for Montreal, a result that if you look at the actual way this game unfolded, Montreal could have won against what could be the best team in the league right now on the road.
And they're playing well. No, fair enough. Yeah, and Montreal's playing well, too, right now. So in terms of getting the sending off, I was on the bus on Saturday with some tourists, I think, from rural Quebec, basing that on their accents, were on the bus. And I really could only make out the odd word here and there, and it was the odd word here and there that would have got me a red card. So maybe that referee knows the odd word in French, too. You know what I mean? Anyway.
Yeah, but he used them in English, so that's the thing. And if you look at the video, the way he was talking, you can clearly decipher a four-letter word that rhyme with puck, you know?
Yeah, that word does not have a home language. It may be English, I guess, by origin, but it's universal at this point in time. Yes, words that rhyme with puck for 1,000, Alex. Anyhow, Montreal's playing very well right now. Good for them. And when you look at the playoff mix right now, I look at all of those teams that are banging around 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and I increasingly think Montreal looks to me like as likely or more likely than most of those teams there to grab one of those spots.
Philly loses when it's not the time, and it seems like Montreal's result always comes. That's why it's a bit too bad. I think it's a bit of a missed opportunity. If Montreal would have got 3 points on the road, you have a good way to actually create a little bit of buffer in 6th position. That 1 point still might be very useful. And it's not a defeat. So you add the win of the Canadian Championship. You had the win in the league. And you continue. So Montreal's on a good run. We all know this. But it's not a fluke of a run. And it's goals that are replicable in my mind. And we always talk about this, Dwayne. Always. We often talk about this. Replicable results. If you have like a wonder goal by Piatti from 30 yards out is not always replicable. But the way they scored with Tider, the way Alex Silva is able to create space and find ways to find other players, and the goal of Mancosu on a beautiful, beautiful long pass by Piatti. One touch. Great finish by Mancosu. Those are replicable goals. And that, for me, is really encouraging to see the next evolution of this crop of players. Add Jimmy Briand, whatever else might be coming to Montreal, if any other players, And it might be the system itself. It might be finally the players, I wouldn't say players buying into Rémy Gall's blueprint, but it finally is showing dividends, right? When you make an investment at the beginning, you have to be patient, and eventually, if you play your cards correctly, it starts paying off and you have interest on your savings. What we're seeing now is all the hard work that Rémy Gall has been putting in training over the last 6 months finally paying off at the MLS level for me.
Yeah, no, for sure. As I say, it's going to be interesting. I'm very much looking forward, Kevin, to 2 weeks when we do that live show in Montreal in the first leg of the Canadian Championship, because I'm right in Vancouver off there anyway. But nonetheless.
Well, it's par for the course. No, right? Canadian Championship, Vancouver, yeah. They only won it once.
Gotta be the, yeah, and it was a strange year they won it. Quickly, before we say goodbye for the day, Kevin, I do want to go back to the AGH, the Jacksonville conversation real briefly. I think that to him, he's a mystery to me this year, and I want to get your perspective on exactly what's going on there. You mentioned a bit of a knock right now. I do think it's unfortunate, and this is a glaring example of where the loss of FC Montreal to that system is hurtful, because I don't think he fits to the Fury either for a short-term loan to get some playing time there. So what is his future in Montreal?
And he wouldn't want to play there either. In his mind, he's an MLS striker, and he's on the level. I don't know behind the scenes what happens, and I don't have any special information. But Rémy Gall has always been coherent about one thing. If you don't practice well, you don't play. Is his playing time due to this? Due to injuries, maybe? There's a lot of questions here. I don't have all the answers. But Rémy Gall does reward hard work. He even rewards hard work, even to the detriment of his fitness and form of his players right now. What I mean is, if he feels only 13 players, 14 players can actually dress up and play, those will be the one who plays. Doesn't matter. There's 3 games in 8 days, 4 and 12, 5 and 15. He's going to put the 11 out there that shows him in the training sessions that they deserve to play. Is this why AGH is not playing? Is this why Jackson is not playing? I can't answer that. But if you just look at Rémy Gall's decision, there could be a key to the answer there. Maybe in training, Rémy Gall does not see what he wants of a few players, and we'll see what the future does hold for Anthony Jackson and Mel. The way he left on Wednesday, the way he said goodbye, the way he left, he did work hard on Wednesday. Let's face it, he could have scored 3 goals against Vancouver, 2 posts, and 1 offside call. But we'll see. He was not happy after the game, of course. Anthony Jackson and Mel is not happy whenever he doesn't score. But you do see a pattern here that in Montreal's lineups, in the 11, usually, if you work hard in training, you'll be on that sheet. And if you don't, you won't.
There's a lot of correlations between the Canadian disease, I'll call it for a second. Canada doesn't produce a lot of great players, as we all know, especially scoring players. And those that we do tend to go up through the ranks scoring boatloads of goals and always just being penned into their lineup sheet, right? So there's a sort of a bad side to that, that they never are pushed until they get to a professional level. So they don't know how to push through adversity. And for years, we saw that with a lot of Canadian players. I'm trying to think of Boudicca, the Edmonton guy that playing out, right? I can't get his name in there. Yeah, exactly.
Boudicca, yeah, of course. But
yeah,
you're right. I know exactly what you mean. Is sometimes good players from early on into their late teenager years in development in our country, in their own municipal association and then the academies, they're that big fish in that pond, and producing the results they are producing don't necessarily have to change everything they're doing or adapt themselves to the team or to a new coach coming in. So there's maybe something to that.
And Jordan Hamilton might fit that bill a little bit as well, although I think Jordan Hamilton's starting to figure it out because he's been in a professional environment a little bit longer than Jackson Amal at this point in terms of the top team, and he is actually making an impact in TFC this year in limited playing time. It doesn't seem to be moping like he did in past years. But the funny thing, comparison between those two players is when they go down, Jackson Amal hasn't as much time in USL, but when Hamilton goes down to USL, he doesn't dominate the way you'd think he would. So there's something weird there, right? Like, it's why I don't think they don't play him very much anymore down there. It just doesn't make sense to. anyway, it's a strange thing. And I think hopefully when you have more with the Canadian Premier League coming in and with MLS academies becoming increasingly standard from U12 up, they will be pushed a little bit more. These players will not necessarily the next generation after this or the generation coming into its own right now won't have that same level of complacency that I think we've seen in the past. And we certainly saw going way back, if I can do a real callback here, back to like that 08 qualifying campaign, you know, the disaster one for South Africa where they got 1 point in the semifinal round. Yeah. A lot of that had to do with those type of players and that generation of players, which were brilliant, the ones that, in terms of their pure talent. They were razor thin in terms of the depth, and none of them were pushed anywhere whatsoever. And when they played for Canada, they never performed. And I always thought it had a little bit to do with that. So hopefully that's starting to change.
And Anthony Jackson-Amel is a proven commodity in MLS, too. We all saw him last year and the year before with a limited playing time getting a lot of goals. Almost every start he did, he scored a goal. I think there's just a few that he didn't. And coming up as a super sub, he did score as well. So we'll see what happens with Anthony Jackson-Amel, but there will be decisions need to be made. Montreal needs an international spot. Do you get one to find a place for Jimmy Briand? Do you buy one, or do you waive a Mancosu, or do you waive a Jason Vargas or something like this to create the Jimmy Briand space? And do you keep Anthony Jackson-Amel to follow a bit of what a Jimmy Briand could do, especially in the system that Rémi Gall wants to play? It's not the first time in his career that Rémi Gall plays this. He did use in Lyon as well with Jimmy Briand as his striker. So maybe Jimmy Briand's role with Montreal is not just to be the starting striker. Could it be a mentor role for maybe Jackson-Amel, who could still be the striker of the future for Montreal?
Yeah, again, this is where Hamilton, they're to me the same player in a lot of ways. People keep saying here, oh, it's time to get rid of him, time to get rid of him. The team never quite does, even though maybe his playing time lapses, and this goes for both these guys. And I think that they are looking more to teach them that work ethic, to have them see that work ethic first point so they can fight through it. And by the time they're 3 or 4 years down the line, and it may seem like an age long time to these kids, but they are still pretty young.
Yeah.
They're all ready to step into that role. I think you have to remember that. These are two very young players we're talking about.
Yeah, and when you say work ethic, we're not saying they're not working. That's not what we're saying. They're not necessarily working in the way their coaches want them to be. And it doesn't mean that they're not putting effort. Yeah, it doesn't mean that they're not putting effort. And the best way I can describe this is Rémi Gall when he talked about Saphir Taider a few weeks ago, saying, look, he always works hard, does great runs, but he didn't run at the right spots on the field. We've talked about this, and look, he scored, what, 4 goals in 3 games now? I think there's something to this. It's not about working. It's not about work ethic. It's not just about showing up and doing it. We're not saying that at all. They all work, they all do great, and he's in great shape, and he always has been in great shape, Anthony Jackson-Amel. There's one thing. He's fit. He's in good fitness, like in good health, and has a great chiseled body. And like, the guy's an athlete. He's a professional athlete, and he looks strong and really in a good fitness. That's not the problem. Sometimes it's just when we say work ethic in the world of football is how you handle training sessions, how you handle your body, the movement in the training sessions, the way you use those training sessions to better your soccer knowledge, to better your instincts, to better your first movement, to make the movement that the coach wants to see as a reflex and not necessarily a hesitation in the thinking of the process and all that. So it's more that sense of just not working. I hate when we say work ethic and people are like, oh, you mean he's not working hard? No, everyone's working hard. You don't get to MLS without working hard. But working hard doesn't mean working in the most efficient way.
No, precisely. It means a lot of things. It can be mentally working, too. It can be thinking about the game 24/7 in a way that players just instinctively do that have more experience. It's all a process to become a professional. And sadly, in this environment, in this country, we haven't had a culture in place that produces professional players instinctively, and hopefully that changes in the near future. But what you're hearing right now is an unintentional preview of what Two Solitudes can be, Kevin, where we get deep in the weeds of Canadian soccer. If you'd like to hear more of that, $2 a month, it's sportspodcasting network on patreon.com. on that note,
patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th minute, myself at Kev Larman. Please support us as well on sportsinspired.ca. get your beautiful mug just like this one. Great polos of the SPN logo too, if you're inclined to look like I do when I cover a game. And as well, great t-shirts, hoodies, and if socks. There's great soccer-inspired content at sportsinspired.ca. And if you're a fan of other sports, you're a fan of tennis, you're a fan of cycling, there's collections waiting for you as well on sportsinspired.ca. And as always, until tomorrow, make sure you subscribe on iTunes, on Google Play Store, anywhere you got your podcast. Make sure you subscribe to Soccer Today or Sports Podcast Network. And we'll be back tomorrow. Until then, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.